this whole idea of problem solving, since we are not going to look in too much into ecclesiastical problems, but let's take a look at personal problems. Okay, now let's say that we are looking at ecclesiastical problems that actually affect the individual. You'll be surprised how this will always be a problem. Especially when you come from, say, another church situation. And if you're used to doing things in a certain way in a particular church, when you go to another church, problems will come. Sooner or later, you will come. And people will say, you know, I can't fit in. I don't like the way they do things, the way they think things so funny. So I always tell people, especially when applying, coming in, don't hurry to go into the church. Because until you resolve all these personal difficulties. Okay, so don't be in a hurry to go and actually look at membership of the church. Because ecclesiastical problems with another church will tend to affect your own personal problem in life. This is something that you need to take note of. Okay? But I want to say that there are ways in which we can solve problems. And I want to suggest that we look at four categories of way of doing things. They're not four methods as such, but categories. And these categories are really, really interesting approaches. The first category we want to look at is always try and find a biblical solution somewhere. And there are 66 books to choose from. And it is good to study them very carefully. And then we can say, okay, now in this particular sense here, this problem was addressed and it was dealt with in this manner. Let's try it. So whenever there are difficulties and problems, I always look at it from the standpoint of the scriptures and say, well, let's try and solve this here. Okay? Number two, the thing that I look for when I look at problem solving is that I want to be sure that the particular approach, the particular method is sound, essentially. Okay? It really has to be sound, otherwise it becomes a problem. And then, of course, there is the approach where it is down-to-earth and practical. It has to be. So if it's just only in theory but doesn't have a practical solution, it solves very little. But the most of all, it must be creative. Now, when we talk about creative problem-solving technique, it really is a bit more complex than you imagine. Because while you may have a biblical example or two, ultimately each situation is unique by itself. And so you need to be creative in approaching this problem. Another problem, similar kind, comes up, and you still need another creative approach to the same problem because a different person is now involved. That's the challenge of it all. That we need this creative approach towards problem solving. There isn't a single straightforward approach at all. Okay, now this is important that you want to appreciate. So sometimes they may even seem contradictory, but they're not. When Paul first approached the Galatian problems, his approach was anathema. Oh, that's a very fierce approach. When he dealt with Colossian problems, change. When he dealt with the Philippians problem, gentle. Same person, three different approaches, yes. 1 Corinthians, first time he wrote.
sorrowful letter approach. Second Corinthians approach, upbeat, really upbeat. Change. This is what we mean by creative. There isn't a standard approach because we are not looking at doctrinal problems. We are looking at problems which could have multiple things. And then you begin to realize that you need this creative approach. It is not inconsistency when we talk about creativity. And we need to be creative in our approaches to resolving problems in the church. Okay? So whenever we have a person who takes it a hard and fast rule on this matter here, you're going to end up with legalism. You're going to end up with Pharisaism. You could even end up with hypocrisy because we have a one standard approach. And that one standard approach is not going to work. When I was younger, I liked ketchup a lot. It was my one sauce that solves every problem. You can have it on anything and everything. And until I grew out of it, and I said, that's not what I like. I have not used ketchup for more than one decade. Really, don't need it. And I want to taste the thing or natural. I want to see what it really is, not to see what it is. Because if that's what it is, then I don't need it. Sauce, whatever sauce, it has no use. I just kill everything. And it can happen. I tend to be a bit more creative. So even in my approach towards food, I'm a bit creative. Okay? So I don't have a standard, single standard approach. And that's where sometimes we go wrong. And, you know, when we are young, we always, why shouldn't it be that way? Shouldn't it be like this? The moment your person says, shouldn't it be like this? You know this person is narrow. Straight away. So you need to be creative. Really, really creative. There isn't a single standard approach. And it took me a long time to understand this. And, okay. You see, ecclesiastical problems can really affect a person quite badly, and you must appreciate this. Take for example in Galatians 5. Okay, when you want to identify a problem, you got to identify it at different levels. So when Paul made a statement, "You ran well, who hindered you from obeying the truth?" You want to look at a problem and how to solve it. You've got to look it, not at the moment of time, but to span it across quite a bit of areas. There is the time factor. There is the personal faith factor. There are false teachers factor and so many other things. So identifying the problem is important. So how do you look back on time and say, this is it? Looking present at a present moment, observing deterioration, facing reality, and of course we have to assess the extent of the adversity in influence. There we go, you identify the problem. Okay, so this is something which we need to take a look at. And we want to approach it very, very carefully. How do you identify a problem? Which afternoon time would be worthwhile? You want to say, okay, here is the problem as we imagine it. Let's try and take a look at this. Okay. Now, here is something else that you want to take a look at. How to resolve problems. Okay? How to identify the problem. And you trace it. Sometimes problems, if you are sharp enough, you can trace it to a little leaven. And you have to be a sharp problem solver. And you say, you know, this is the problem. It began with a little leaven, and it spreads. And sometimes you cannot catch a little leaven. You need to have an insight thing. This morning I was speaking to Kenneth, and I was saying to him, as I look into my own life ministry, I began to realize that there are a number of stages in ministry. The first number of years, knowledge was the basis of ministry. The next number of years, wisdom that grew out of experience and knowledge became focus of ministry. They still are relevant, they are still important, but it is now a third element. That element is called enlightenment. You see things differently. It is no longer straightforward. Knowledge is no longer just insight, wisdom. You need to be able to do something else different. You need to be able to interpret things creatively and say, let me troubleshoot the future and bring it to the present. And therefore, take the preemptive approach. That's what we've been learning. That's what we need to learn further. And that's a great challenge. It's this understanding of a little leaven. So we all begin with knowledge, teach the Lord's word. We go on with insight, wisdom that comes from it as you teach. You begin to realize this. But you begin to realize, as a church becomes more and more sophisticated, as the church grows bigger and bigger, those would not even be enough. You need to have the enlightened approach. Enlightenment with reference to this. And that's where a lot of people find very hard to adjust. Well, how come we have this approach? Well, we did not have this, let's go to Shangri-La RCCC approach. It wasn't until the 25th anniversary, 8 years ago, that we began this. The moment we found the significance of it, we said, this is going to be the next feature. And the challenge was, okay, now, can we do the same thing at Christmas? And so we did it. And it is now a feature. We want to extend it further and see whether we can go into Easter, but it would be heavy going. So we said creatively, let's cut back to just an outreach and cut back the cost to its just basic minimum. And everything gets sold out. They're all different. So it is knowledge, it is wisdom, it is enlightenment. And they become standard features now. They did not standard when they first began. They were challenging concepts to consider. So this problem-solving thing is important that we need to. If the church does not pull together, it will lose its cutting edge of being close. The cohesion can be lost. There are lots of things we want to look at, so you keep on doing this. We begin to realize that we are the only church that does these things regularly. There are churches that do this also, but differently. They go into spending all the money into faith healing. They hire somebody and pay him a fortune to come and to say, to show that he is the anointed. And he's come and he's gone. And they're coming again in December. And he is a prophetic person. And he comes all the way from Korea. And he is so wonderful. And we must listen to him. Well, it's just like being on sale. Every month is a sale. There is a mid-year sale. There is a beginning and end-of-year sale. There is a post-Christmas sale. There is an Easter sale. There is a spring sale. There is an autumn sale. End-of-the-season sale. And you look at all 12 months a year. There is even a closed-down sale. Everything must go sale. It's once-in-a-lifetime sale. Sorry, Adeline, but that's after a while we all After a while, we see the word sale until we just don't even respond to that word sale anymore. Sale worth waiting for. And it's after a while a phrase. When they first read it, they say, oh, that's just really looking at it. Maybe. After a while, it's the same old stuff. If you're not careful. Okay? Well, we take a look at these things here. So you need to have the insight to ask, is this a leaven problem? Okay? If it's a leaven problem, it's a little bit more complex than you imagine, because how do you take out the leaven? You can't. Because the leaven has already been mixed. It's all over the place now. And so you've got to tread very sensitively. You cannot just simply resolve the problem, this one, then fix. You can't do that. You take that approach, you're going to create even more problems along the way. Okay? So it's important. We cannot go to the church and say, let's fix all the problems. Remember this, when you go over the first, don't try and fix all the problems. That would be disaster. You're going to kill yourself. That kind of approach is really juvenile. It's really immature. And don't even think about it. Because it's not how it's going to be fixed. If it's a leaven problem. Why? Because it's all over. It's already been mixed in. You cannot resolve problems like that. That would be a person. You see a person solve a problem. And you can tell this person is immature. He cannot handle the problem like this. Okay? So don't try to solve things, you know, and you think that theoretically I'll just solve it like that. It's not going to be solved like this. Okay. Now we have got another problem. This is an interpersonal problem, which is even more complex, where people bite each other. And then they end up devouring each other. Beware lest you be consumed by one another. That is one of the most difficult problems to resolve when you have an interpersonal problem, set of problems. You don't like this person, you don't like that person, you don't like the other person, and there we go. And you cannot underestimate this danger. As long as there are human beings in the church, and there will always be, these interpersonal problems will remain. If it is not one level, it is another. If it is not one thing, it is another. I think that's something you need to consider very carefully. Okay? And it's something that, you know, a male-female problem will always be there. There was this person who went to the library, first time joining the library, librarian was a young lady, and he was trying to pick her up and said, this card can borrow how many books? She says, as many as you can be. And then he asked, can it also borrow video? Yes. And he went on further, can I also take you out? And she replied, librarians are for reference only. That was very good, very smart, and I think that it is interesting to approach it from that standpoint. Yes? So, you know, interpersonal problems are things that we need to look at very, very carefully. All right, number four. So we take a look at this here. Now, if a person is overcome in any trespass, and this is a difficult one, and you're going to anticipate this coming, okay? You're going to anticipate this one, and Singapore has an IR problem. It may create 20, 30, 40,000 jobs. It will inherit 50,000 problems. And one big problem starts with A, and that problem is addiction. You know, the offering may suffer. There is nothing to give. Worse, some people can put inside and take out some. I mean, it can become a real problem. I mean, serious problem. It could be a real difficulty. I'm right now dealing with one where a person is asking, how do I solve this problem? Okay, now what is this problem here? That is obviously so much money being wasted every month. And it is not even a casino problem. It is called Toto problem. And the Toto can also become a real problem. I mean, seriously, it can, you know, every month spend a few hundred dollars on this thing here, hoping that you will strike it rich. But you know, you're not getting anywhere at all. So how do you have this thing? And we need, and this is where we need help. We really do. We need to overcome, help people to overcome. Restore such a one. And that's important. Okay? Where the person needs to be restored, you cannot restore yourself. Yesterday I was coming down and poor boy, he brought his toy to Sunday school. Poor fellow. And then somebody stepped on it. Ouch. And it got broken. And he stood there and tears came to his eyes and he was crying and he was really, really, really upset because his toy got broken. So what do you do? He needs to be restored. He cannot be restored. So I said, well, who did it? He says, Dad. So I said, did you say sorry? Then he decided, oh, I'm sorry. But it's a bit difficult now. The toy, the aeroplane there, the little engine is already spoiled. And it looks like it's been, cannot be fixed. You need a real engineer to fix it. And it is going to be tough. And you need help. Just to answer the question very briefly, what AG can do, I wish we would all be able to help each other and say, can I help you? Seriously, reach out and say, can I help you? Okay? But you must say it properly. You cannot say, can I help you? Then immediately the help is gone. The offer for help is cannot be believed immediately. So you want to be careful about things like, but can we help each other? And we should. Okay? It's very important. Now watch. Please restore such a one in the spirit of gentleness. Well, so simple, you don't know. That's it. And it is, you require gentleness. You look at a person's, doesn't know how to plan the week, doesn't know how to plan the day. You're so simple, you don't know. Why? How long have you been in church? You still don't know. How old are you? Well, you're 30 years old, don't know how to plan the month. Now, please be gentle. It is, so it's not a question of only how, what to help in, how to help. And it's something that we need to look at very, very carefully. Okay, but we need to learn how to carry each other's burden. Very important. Now, if we want to look at how to improve the YAG situation, where we can develop a spirit of concern, we can help each other to bear each other's burdens, and that would be a great help. It really would be. Okay, but we don't want to give the impression that we can solve all the problems at all, because it's not how it works. There is a fellow who comes once a month to come and ask for help, and he will show me his rate bill, which he has not been paying. And he says there, a huge amount. And I say, how do you run up this bill? Your bill higher than my house. He said, no, I have not been paying and not been paying. I told him, you know, something I learned about HDB and all those water supply, as long as you pay something, they won't cut off. Okay? Even if you pay $10, they won't cut off. But please pay the $10. So if you ask me to settle all your problems, I won't. I will just give you enough for you not to, for the PUB to shut you out. But it's not going to solve your problem. Why? When you every month you worry, well, may you worry. Because I'm not going to solve your problem. In the early days, I thought, yes, I'm going to help you solve your problem. You poor thing, you, no electricity, no water. Until I realized that those people were very good at doing that. They're going to spend the money elsewhere. You got no water, you got no electricity, serves you right. I will help you enough to go and not get PUB to shut off your supply. That's it. I'm not going to solve your problems. Can't. Right? 1 week I go to Pochu and I got no money to pay. She very kindly helps me. Next month I go to George and George also cannot pay. After that I go over to see, okay, please help me. All you need is 12 people in circulate. Then find 12 more, 24. Once in a while, you know, I still remember you helped me 2 years ago. Yeah, thank you very much. You know, I'm really sorry, you know. Please help. But please, don't tell Pastor. When somebody says, don't tell Pastor, tell. Happens all the time. Okay, we've been fooled by the best, by the way. We've been fooled by the best. So you cannot fool us anymore by all these things. Yeah, we've seen it. We've seen them all. We've been conned by professionals. And when you've been conned by professionals, amateur, you're very easy to tell. What is this? This is nothing. Huh? So it's something that we need to look at very carefully. One day, one person came over and he wanted to... Well, he was trying to take advantage of a lady in our church. She's not a member. She just came over and wanted to take advantage. So the person said to me, can you please, I really, really am scared of this guy because he has taken advantage already. I want to just be done with him. So he sent him over to me and he was a gangster fellow. So I told him, I said, look, I know what it means to walk in the street, so don't give me all your nonsense. So he said to me, what do you read me? Did I tell you honestly? You're a con man. And he would say, you know, no, I'm not a con man. I'm a general manager of a firm, this and that. I said, let's go to your office right now. He wasn't. He's just one smooth talker. And there he was, a con man. Then he finally, how come you know, huh? I told him, I have been fooled by the best. So you're not the best. Then after that, he left. He left the church, he left it, and well, it happens. Another occasion, I met this guy, and I saw him in Amokyo going to have his lunch. He looked at me, a bit sheepish. He went the other side. He went back to jail. And it is not going to change. One day he called me up and he said, why won't you baptize me? I said, you don't know the Lord. He said, but I do. I believe in Jesus. I said, really? Where are the fruits in your life? Then he said, if I die, how? I said, we'll bury you. Then I die unbaptized, how? It will be your fault. I said, no, it will be not my fault. It's your fault. I will give you a decent burial. That's it. Like that. Well, then I won't go to your church. It's fine. Don't succumb to emotional blackmail like this. You're going to help anybody. Okay? It's very, very important, and there will always be people who will attempt that. Well, how do we resolve problems on our own? I think this is very important for us to consider. One of the best ways is to learn how to solve your own problems. Learn how to see the Spirit of God convicting us. That's the best. How to solve your own problems? The best way is to learn how to deal with your own problems. Okay? If you can solve your own problems because the Spirit of God is helping you, you will resolve them best. Okay? No need to tell anybody about your problems. And, you know, a lot of us feel that we need to tell people about our problems. as if people are interested. Or as if people are just really, really, really concerned. Be careful, because there are lots of people who are not concerned. You know, and they're just bored to death. And then be careful of this. All right. How do we solve problems? Well, I really like Psalm 51 approach. You confront yourself, you seek the cleansing, you look for complete restoration, and that is going to go a long, long way. Okay? There is a change of heart, there is a complete makeover situation. Now, what do you look for when you look at these things like that? What are your goals? What are your fruit? Another word for goal. And I think it's important that we appreciate this. When you solve your problems effectively, they will return personal joy. It will be. It's a really wonderful thing. There will be a return to the Lord. There will be a renewal of walk with God. And that's important. Okay? But if the problems remain within our lives, then a number of things would happen. One big problem is that of obvious stagnation. You want to watch how a person is in life, in church, personally. You watch a stagnation coming in. That's your first telltale sign. There are unresolved problems. Stagnation is to the spirit what constipation is to the body. No, I mean that. I mean seriously. You know, it makes you feel out of sorts. It makes you ill. It makes you, you know, there's something wrong somewhere. So you want to appreciate this. I'm serious about this whole idea of this thing here. An old Roman joke. When generals criticize senators, one standard criticism is that the person is suffering from constipation. Back in the old Roman days, in the Caesars, and that's how they actually see it as a physical problem. They really feel it as a physical problem, but you know, it's a terrible situation. There's a sense of malaise. A malaise literally is a sense of foreboding, a sense of not being well, and yet you are not sick. And it's a sense of something impending is going to come, and there's a tiredness, a weariness, but you don't know what it is. And you can't put your finger at it, but you don't have the energy, you don't have the strength, and it's not so good. Then, of course, you'll find if you do not solve your personal problems, you'll find yourself growing weaker every day. Watch out for spiritual weakness. It never goes away. It makes you weaker all the time. So you must solve your thing. So if you're not growing stronger, you are growing weaker. It never stands still. So you want to watch out for this very, very carefully. And then, of course, after a while, you naturally just drop out, which is a shame. And, of course, we end up with spiritual death. Okay? Now, as we look into this thing here, I want to later on concentrate on the last part of it. I'm just stating the obvious. There are dangers attending when you look at approaches, because today there is this whole idea of a schism problem. I don't know why people don't feel the schism problem is a wrong thing, because it really is. Okay, one of greatest ecclesiastical sins of church today is the problem of schism. when we think nothing of causing a break in the church, as if it is a, as if you are championing a cause. Whisper a word to in the ear of Kenneth. Tell him how good he is. Tell him how wonderful he is. Tell him he's a white knight. Tell him we were waiting all our life for you, for the past 33 years, waiting for you to come up. And if it gets into his head that he is indeed a white knight, we are going to have problems. It's very easy to sow discord. And sometimes we unwittingly sow discord. And we compliment one but not another. And then suddenly the discord is sown without you even realizing. There are dangers. You may mean well. You may want to encourage his heart. But it can turn out badly. So you want to watch out for this. Sometimes, you know, as pastors, people don't tell you how wonderful your messages are. Be thankful. Be really, really thankful. Okay? And there are lots of jokes about pastors who want to hear. One day there was a pastor, after preaching a sermon, one man came up, waited in line, shook his hand and said, "You know, that was a real dumb sermon." And he said, "Well, I'm sorry you didn't like it." So he came round again. A few other people shook his hand and said, "That was such a shallow sermon." And this went on for 5-6 times. And he was getting a bit disturbed. Same person. So someone whispered to the pastor and said, "Don't listen to him. He's a dimwit." So the pastor's heart, okay, "Oh, he's only a dimwit. It's okay." Then the person said, "He only repeats what he hears from others." Ouch. You know, when you have... I like to read jokes about pastors because it cuts us down to size. There was this pastor who said, somebody said, "You are a real model pastor." And he was so happy. But he was troubled a little bit. So he looked up his dictionary and it confirmed his disquiet. He read the word "model," a replica of the real thing. So when people say things about you to you, or if they don't say, better to take it as good than to wish for compliments and then it doesn't turn out as you expected. Someone may say it's very good, but in your heart it was actually excellent. It only got reduced to good. Or not bad, huh? Only not bad. And your heart can sink. So please be very wise, be careful. There are dangers. In 1 Corinthians we have got all kinds of problems, wrong approaches. When we try and solve the world's, our problems through worldly wisdom. But now, today, it is litigation. But it is not new. It is really not new. Because it can, you know, when we were building this church, our neighbor wanted to sue us. Sure, you did not know that? I'll tell you now, it's over. First, we asked him, we're going to set back the wall, you know. This wall is a little bit curved, and you are taking our land. What do you mean, your land? We'll sue you. And cited Lee and Lee. As if we are scared. Anyway, we happened to speak to Lee and Lee. We also are lawyers. And lawyer cannot sue their own lawyer, the same firm. So they realize, actually cannot sue us. So, not so good. So the lawyer called up the other side and said, well, let's get an independent surveyor. And they realized to their horror, it is true, it is actually our land, they built it here at that time, many years ago. I said, we'll do it nicely and have a nice fence for you. And, okay. Litigation. Always this threat of litigation. And our approach is lunch and dinner. That's our return. Don't litigate. Let's L for lunch. Let's go for lunch. Don't L for litigate. And it's very hard to sue somebody with whom you're having lunch. So we had lunch, and dinner. That helped. Hooray for lunch. That really helped. And it's okay, all right. That's okay. It's over now. Now they're borrowing our car park all the time. You know, they're borrowing all the time. You go, wedding, can we borrow? Wedding, borrow. It's okay. Be gracious. I mean, there's no problem. We don't be not so petty as all that. Many times they have, every year they borrow from us many times. It's okay. It's no problem. Now, we are a little bit more friendly with it. No need to take this litigious approach. We should not do that. It should not be, you know, I'll just sue you kind of a thing here. And it's sad. No? It is sad when people want to sue the pastor. I think it is just as sad for the pastor want to sue the member. Can it happen? I mean, it can go the way. George suddenly sues me. So I'm angry with him. So I sue him back. It is really sad when we come down to this. Please don't even think about this. But this is not how we want to solve the problems. Okay. Now I'm going to give you a list of things which we could practice, which I think would be really, really useful. Okay? And this is a principle that you want to practice, and it's in the scriptures. If you want to solve problems, the best thing you could do is to go to the person one-on-one. And it's very important that we're going to say to the person one-on-one, and we say to you, okay, now this is our problem. Whatever it is. Okay? And so you go up to the person and you say, here it goes. I mean, that's the best thing to do. Okay? I mean, this is something that we don't practice this a whole lot, but it's very difficult. But the best thing to do is go one-on-one. That's what Jesus said, go one-on-one. When Jesus taught this principle, let's turn to Matthew 18 for a while. I think you need to take a look at what Jesus meant and how he said it. Verse 15. If your brother sins against you, okay, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you gain your brother. Now, it's interesting. A sins against B. Normal reaction, A must apologize to me. Right? I didn't do anything wrong. Why should I go and see you? Wrong. A offends B. B goes to A. You take the approach. Very hard. Okay? And something that we need to appreciate, and we need to take this approach, a one-on-one principle. Okay. Principle 2-3 witnesses. Please, they must not be your gang, okay? It's easy to find two or three people who are on your side and gang up against a person. It's called a kangaroo court. Judge, jury, hangman, all together. It's a hard principle to apply. But the principle of application here must be that these two witnesses is an Old Testament principle. They must not be unfair people. In the Old Testament, there is a set of apocryphal books. And this is one, the story is called Daniel the Judge. So one day, two men came along and accused a woman of adultery. And Daniel sent these two chaps, you know, are just very frustrated beings, and they were trying to get back at this woman who was obviously rejecting their advances. So he said to the man, "Well, how did you know that?" He said, "Well, I saw her." "Oh, really? Well, where do you see her?" "I was up on a tree." "And your friend was there with you?" "Yes, both of us saw from the same tree." So he went to the first man, "All right, I want to talk to you separately. In which tree did you see this woman?" And he said, "The palm, of course." And then he went to the other person, shorter fella, short fella, unlikely to cross a time of palm. He said, "What did you see?" "Oh, I climbed up a juniper." Immediately, both of them were in trouble with the law because they tried to frame somebody. So this principle of two witnesses is not as simple as you imagine. They have to be people who are not going to be necessarily your friends or will take your side. They have to be impartial. They have to be independent. They cannot be your friends. So many people try to apply the principle. They bring two or three of their closest friends, accuse that person, not correctly applied. That's not how it works. Okay? It's very important. We appreciate this. Number three. Now, this principle is a difficult principle to apply. It's where we read the whole church congregation principle. And this is such a difficult thing to apply. It really, really is. Where the whole congregation gathers and then pronouncement is made. And it is hard. It's something that we need to consider very carefully. I know of some people who, you know, last time when Billy Graham came to Singapore, and people were invited, and people attended those meetings, and then the offering was collected. I know one particular person who was looking after his section of people counting money. Quite a number of the biggest bill were put inside, $1,000 bill. And there were so many, there was this counter who, one moment, the $1,000 bill was there, the next moment, it disappeared. And remember, they have to get a person who is a senior who will watch over this thing, and the person said, "Put it back." Can it happen that way? Yes. In which case, it's a very serious matter. Okay, it could be a criminal matter, it could be a church congregational matter, but it is something a bit more serious than 1-on-1, 2 and 3. It is something very, very, very serious, this matter here, usually of a criminal nature. Okay, that's difficult to apply. Now, above 1, 2, 3 is the principle that posture appeal to. Porsche, as in Merchant of Venice, Porsche. Heard of Merchant of Venice? Shakespeare? And she pleads. She pleads for mercy. And I still remember those few lines. And talk about how it is twice blessed. It blesses him who gives and him who takes. It falls as a gentle dew from heaven, but not on Shylock's heart. He must have his pound of flesh. You know, reading Shakespeare is quite fun, but you're not sitting for exams. It really is. I really enjoy reading it from time to time. When I have a moment when I really, really feel, oh, I've done everything I could, and I am looking at, oh, it is so refreshing to read. It's just wonderful. And I always get refreshed when it's really quite a little insight. It's wonderful to be able above everything else. I like here. Okay? So Peter came up to him and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me? And I approach him and I forgive him. Tell me, how many times? They are going to look at people who are going to abuse the system. Okay? I am going to abuse the system 7 times. Can I do this 7 times? And I said, I do not say to you up to 7 times, but up to 70 times 7. Oh boy. This principle of 70 times 7 is one of the most beautiful principles. One-on-one, 2, 3, and then congregation, even greater than any of these things here would be forgiveness. It is one of the most beautiful things to apply in a church. One of the hardest things to do is to forgive. And it is true that we need to look into this very, very carefully. And of course, the principle of forgiveness is in the parable of the 2 debtors highlighted. Okay? And so we see this situation there, and you've been forgiven of so much. This is nothing. It's okay. Forgive, 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 forgive. That's it. One of the hardest things to do. We can only sing it in a song called He. And He knows every lie that you and I have told. And He says, I forgive. Sometimes we sing a song and you wonder, how can just He forgive like that? Not only He can, He has. All our sins are covered, past, present, and future. Wow, that is really amazing. That's what the Lord wants us to do, to attempt. Forgive. It's really, really hard. Okay? Now we move on further into Romans 14. Now, this is a very, very challenging study. Okay, this is very important. Romans 14 is one of the most challenging things to study. Really, really is. And that is when we must create within our church an atmosphere, a scenario where we have healthy differences. Okay, we're not talking doctrinal problems right now. We're not talking anything criminal. But we are now talking about something which is quite different. There we go. In chapter 14. Let's turn to Romans 14. Take a bit of time here. There will be those who are weak in the faith. There will be. But please do not receive them to dispute over doubtful things. Now, that's interesting. Okay? One believes he may eat all things. One who is weak eats only vegetables. Let not him who eats despise him who does not eat. Let not him who does not eat judge him who eats. There you go. We can go both ways. There are some who believe in the Sunday lunches. There are those who don't. There are those who believe in giving. There are those who believe only in eating. Unfortunately, there will be us to contribute, or it's very expensive. If you ask me some more, I leave the church. Can it happen that way? Yes. Mercifully, we exercise forgiveness. And don't ask questions. you know. But you also don't want to look at these eyes. These are never give, never give, never. No good. Please don't do this. Create an atmosphere in the church where we will not see this happening. Please don't judge another person. With reference to food, it's a big problem. To eat and not to eat. How much to eat, how much not to eat. It's a big problem. The more the person eats, you tell the person, you don't need this food. But you cannot snatch it away also. And you see some, oh, it's a huge amount. And you tell yourself, well, that will last me 3 days. And each one of us have different styles of approach towards food, towards eating. And that's true, isn't it? Don't judge. You've got to create this atmosphere where we say, let's not do this. What about looking at a day? One person esteems one day above another, another esteems every day alike. And Paul says, let each be fully convinced in his own mind. Okay, and it's true. There are some who will, yes, we believe in Christmas. There will be some, no, we don't. There's some who say, let's go to Shangri-La. There's some who say, let's go Chom Chom. But we cannot put 1,000 people in Chom Chom. That is the problem. Can it happen that way? There are some people who believe in dressing nicely. Well, there's some who don't. Better to dress well now than for people to dress you nicely when you are dead. Oh, looks so handsome. For what? You look so nice. Don't do that. I mean, that is just such a shame. Okay, here we go. He who observes the day, observes it to the Lord. He who does not observe the day, to the Lord he does not observe it. You know, that's interesting. How does he not observe it to the Lord? Look at this. He who eats, eats to the Lord. He gives God thanks. He who does not eat to the Lord, he does not eat. He gives God thanks. Thank you for, I'm not eating today. Can I do that? Sometimes I ask, please say grace. Lord, thank you for the food that I'm not going to eat. That's a strange way of saying grace. But you know what? Paul says it's okay. Can you give thanks and eat? Yes. Can I still give thanks and not eat? Yes. Please make room for such things. You mustn't make it a hard and fast rule for everybody. You know, on Christmas Day, this is our Bethany law. Everybody must go to Shangri-La. No. And there will be people who won't. And they will not be there. Or maybe they will only attend worship, but they will not stay on for lunch. Cheapskate. No. Don't say those words. Because they can... Why are you so stingy? And you know, no, don't say those words. And the person didn't sign up and didn't... Okay, just eat. Okay? And if the person still has, after the food has been digested, still hasn't paid, next year want to come again. Be big hearted. It's okay. Okay? And even if his name happens to be George Thomas, it's okay. Okay, look at him. So awful. No, don't. Be gracious. Maybe that month he's really tight. And you just, I mean, it's being very big about the whole thing. Verse 7, none of us lives to himself, no one dies to himself. If we live, we live to the Lord. If we die, we die to the Lord. Whether we live or we die, we are the Lord's. It is so important that we appreciate this. Verse 12, each one will give account of himself to God. Therefore, let us not judge one another any more. That's the word. Don't judge any more. Stop this. Rather, resolve this. Not to put a stumbling block or a cause to fall in our brother's way.
I know and am convinced by the Lord Jesus there is nothing unclean of itself.
And that's the best approach. There's nothing, that's nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong.
One day, one of the theological professors at a great seminary was asked pointedly, will you go to a cinema show? And he is one of the more prominent pastors in Warsaw. And he said, I'll drive my car to the next county. You know, most of the members are here, so he'll drive to the next county. I mean, it's a shame that we have to do this. Please don't judge another person, whether the person is, you know, going to see a show or not. Please don't do that. What is so great about renting it, come home to see the same? Please don't. There is nothing unclean in itself. Paul says, I am convinced. The word, when he says, I'm convinced, literally, we call this a perfective word. Meaning to say, I have been convinced a long time ago, and I'm speaking as one who is convinced there is nothing that is unclean of itself. To him who considers anything unclean, it is unclean. That's the problem. Okay, we often like to judge, pass judgment on things like this. If your brother is grieved because of your food, you are no longer walking in love. Do not destroy him with your food.
Okay? So if your food, you know, really makes you, I mean, it really somebody, you know, there's this problem of eating pig's blood. How many of you like pig's blood? You like pig's blood? Only one, two, three, or four, five. It's all right, we forgive you. You know, I was asked this question many, many years ago. And they asked me, they said, Pastor, the Bible says do not eat blood. Then how? So I said, I classify this under food, not under blood. Because there is a special meaning of do not eat food, blood. You know? And of blood. You see, there are reasons why some, you know, for example, whether the Muslims or the Jews, they have a special way of killing the animals. For example, if they're going to kill the chicken, they must use a very sharp knife. They cannot use a blunt knife. And the poor chicken suffers for a long time before the chicken finally dies. Oh, that would not be acceptable. Because it's humane not to do that. If you're going to kill, please let it be killed. It all must be examined. You know, the people will come and examine to make sure that the knives are properly sharpened and there's a technique of doing it and as quickly as possible. But then here come the Chinese people. The Chinese people, sometimes they are really, really not very nice people. Here comes the monkey, not dead yet, shave off his head, eat the brains. Life. I think that's a little bit much. And they invent all sorts of things there. But you know what? Even though it may be offensive to you, that's why in Korea they eat dogs. And the other people, it's actually an emotional problem. Please do not imagine they take your dog and go and cook. They don't. Those dogs which are sold in the market are specially bred things. So if you see somebody eat blood, please do not think that it's bad. There are some groups that will even go to the extent of you cannot have blood transfusion because it's blood. So you want to be careful of these things here, because that which is eaten is under food. And Paul tells us that, okay, there is nothing unclean in itself, but it may offend a person. Let us say to read, if eating blood, no matter how you like it, it will offend a person. What would you do with it? You can say, it's okay, I can give it up. You can eat at home. But, you know, if eating there offends a person, then it's okay. Exercise that graciousness. Exercise that love to say, that's okay. It's fine. That's not a problem. I hope that we will have that graciousness enough to be able to do just that. Okay? So this is something we want to appreciate. The kingdom of God is not eating and drinking. Verse 17. Here we go. Verse 21. It is good neither to eat meat, nor drink wine, nor do anything by which your brother stumbles or is offended. But notice, it is not because that eating or drinking is bad in itself. It's just that it may cause someone to stumble. But not in itself, in any way. If we can take this approach, and we can provide the atmosphere for this, I think we're going to go a long, long way to help. Of how to, it's what we mean by creative, looking at it very, very carefully. Okay. Number six. There are times when we may and have difficulties. And in the book of Acts, there was this big problem. You know, the Hebrews and the Greeks, and they speak different languages. They're all Jews, and they end up with problems. I mean, this is really quite serious. You know, in India this could happen too, right? I know that there was one wedding that I attended, and they were, normally it's just biryani vegetable. But that year I asked, why don't you have biryani, you know, maybe chicken, or they said, well, mutton. So since I was going to help pay for that lunch, so they said, okay, thank you very much. We will have biryani mutton. That was the last time I ever make such a silly suggestion. Because the bride side was more than the bridegroom side. And the bride side was very strong. They look at the bride side, they happily give 5-6 pieces of mutton. The bridegroom side only gave 2. And they said, why 2? And the other side got 6. It became a problem. So sometimes when I go there, I like to help serve, because I would tell whoever is serving, let's be sure that we are very generous with the portions. Please don't stinge. Go ahead, give. And they have such a lot. But that was the last time I ever suggested mutton. You make one mistake, don't make it again. And now they are very happy to see them eat vegetable. Vegetable, hardly anything to dispute. You cannot say, you only gave me one long bean. You got 2 long beans here. That is not a problem. So you know, that is not a difficulty. Usually people don't fight over that. Huh? Vegetables easier, just take whatever it is. And a lot of times, not much vegetable anyway. It's mostly rice, and then some curd and some sweets and things like that. So it's not a problem. But make sure that the work of the Lord is not affected. And the work of the Lord is in the ministry of the Scriptures and the ministry of prayer. Make sure that those things are not affected. That's the important thing. Okay? Well, I like this creativity part which we really mentioned. And it's really amazing. You know, for them to come up with creative... One of the greatest challenges today is to come up with creative solutions, which I think the church lacks very, very badly. It is so standard. Anything you don't want, cannot read, boom, taboo. And they shoot, they throw the Bible at you, and they come up with laws. If they don't have old laws, they create new ones to bind a person. It is not the idea. It's creativity. Okay, that's very, very important that we want to appreciate that.
And then, of course, the issue is that of leadership. Acts 20. And it always is a big problem when it comes to leadership. Paul tells, warns the people. Verse 29, Acts 20, Paul says, I know this. You know, I heard this text being read many years ago, actually read. And he was my friend, he read this. And at that point of time, that pastor has this, to me, really bad habit. You know what he does? Every time he gets upset, he will say, I want to resign. And so the church will feel very bad about it and say, never mind, you go on a sabbatical, go 1 year. Go anywhere you go. Just go. And I will look after the church, but you come back. And he's been doing that so many times. Every few years, something offends him, and the church has to give him sabbatical. Sabbatical means 1 whole year, no work, full pay leave. Wow. Tell me what job pays that, right? And there he goes, repeatedly. Well, this man, at a farewell dinner, read this. He said, after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. From among yourselves, men will rise up, speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after themselves. The two leading elders of that church heard these words. They were hopping there. I know I was there. I would tell him, hey, the elder, please come down, come down. Please, don't worry, come down, don't react, don't do this. So I asked the person who read it later on. I said, why do you read such a passage? He says, only the text-wise, the Bible, what's wrong with that? He refused to admit it. But they were using Bible verses to hit each other. You know, if you look back now, it's hilarious. But when you were there at the scene, it's not. And the person said, I'm going to sue you. And he could have, because he was a lawyer. It is scary to know that people will do things like that. Please, be very, very wise. Be very careful. Leadership is always hard to deal with. Each one has got his own style. Well, the sad part of it is that one day when he said he wanted to resign, the church said yes. And he's out. That's a sad thing. It really, really is. I'm telling you this. It's a sad problem of leadership. It happens, unfortunately. Okay? So when people write to me and they tell me I want to resign, I say yes. It's something we need to think about very carefully. Okay? We don't want to use the Lord's work in this way here, like this. Now, here is another creative thing that we must do. 2 Timothy chapter 2 challenges us, and this is important. Important, and we read it. And Paul tells Timothy, and the things that you heard from me among many witnesses, commit these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. And this is a creative thing here. And that is to make sure that you create another generation of leaders. You see, it's not just dealing with problems. It's being able to create. You have no idea who these leaders can be, what they will become one day. You never know. To me, it is quite unusual for Charles to write to me. He told me that, Pastor, after exam, you tell me which day you're free, he will come and see me. So he wrote to me yesterday and he said, Pastor, exam over now. When are you free? I want to see you. So I told him, this week I will be busy. Next week I'll be in Perth. In the meantime, write to me.
Okay, I asked him, Bitten, what area of knowledge would you like to learn? You never know how this young fellow one day can serve the Lord. You don't know. You see, that's creativity. Okay? Not that we are saying all the old people are fuddy-duddies. No. But we must always have in the wings leaders who will rise up. Must. It's important that we understand this and appreciate this. That we must look at very carefully. And this is how Paul developed his whole idea of creative solution, offering creative solutions. Okay? Where there are obvious doctrinal problems, no budging. Anyone with a change of gospel, anathema from God. That's very obvious. Non-doctrinal matters, Romans 14 applies. It's okay. You want to eat more? Eat. You want to eat less? Eat less. You don't want to eat at all? It's okay. The kingdom of God is not measured in terms of food and drinks. That's all. I mean, it's pretty straightforward there. And I really appreciate this. And if we can finally come to this level and say, let's look at the next generation. Maybe they will do things differently from us. Who knows? I mean, really, who knows how it would be? We can't tell what the church will be like. Maybe it's time for us to go. I tell you, I have great difficulty. I think Adeline probably noticed. I have great difficulty singing young people's songs. Great difficulty. And they all just take it up so nicely. Oh, I'm just so happy. It takes me forever to learn one song. I can listen to it so many times. But to them, a couple of times, and they are ready to go. I have difficulty. You have difficulty, George? I don't know how to sing. I don't know how to go. I really have difficulty. But that's fine, you know. I have no problems. If I have difficulty, get them to lead the song. Please. But I can enjoy the way they sing. But get them to sing hymns. Oh, it is a great difficulty. After that was interesting. After the study in Revelation 5, we finished on worship. Now, it's interesting. Jonathan Jacob came out and told me, he says, Pastor, can we use hymns in our camp, our youth conference now? I said, that's great. That's wonderful, because this year he's looking after the worship part. I've taken it away from the usual older people. Now you do it. And it's interesting. He's going to consider hymn singing now, because he's just so convicted on the subject of let's offer the worship that we ought to give to the Lord. Can you see this? I mean, it's something we need to look at. It's so good to see these younger ones coming up and say, I just want to do. It really is. So this year, instead of using older people to lead the camps, which is simple, the challenge is to look at a whole new thing, get a whole lot of team of leaders. None of them have ever done this before. Learn. And it's working out well. It really is. And it's a joy. It's this creativity part of it. So every year we experiment. We look at something different. Let's do something different again. So that we can see this. At Christmas at Shangri-La, you know what I would like to try and do? And after this is over, we're going to talk to Amy already, arrange for all the babies to have a wonderful baby parade. And we're not going to look at who is a smile, the most smiling, the one who screams the loudest. No. And we're going to say everyone is a winner, because everyone is a promise. It'll be wonderful. We've never had a baby parade before. Why can't we have one now? It's a baby show. Plus, it's a Bethany baby show. Is it possible? Yes. What if they dirty themselves? Well, they're going to do it anyway. You know, and it's just wonderful to just look at it and say, let's enjoy this Christmas because our theme is promise and fulfillment. And every child is a promise, waiting to be fulfilled. That's our challenge, fulfillment. You see, it's something new again. We must be learn how to be creative in our worship rather than we shall sing three hymns. After that, the message. After that, go home. Next year, same time, same place, Christmas. Don't do that. The Lord prepared a choir to sing at the birth of the Lord Jesus. Creative, appearing to shepherds, to wise men, but not the people. That's very, very creative. Indeed, it had to be in the middle of the night. The shepherds washed their socks. I mean, you know, it's just so wonderfully refreshing to read the Lord's Word and then to see how we can just appreciate it afresh. Every year I pray, Lord, help me to appreciate this in a fresh, new way. And, you know, that creativity upsets some people. They really upset some people. Why are we here different? Well, why can't we just have simple candlelight service? You go home. They say, wow, so wonderful, so wonderful. How many times can you sing candlelight every year? The same thing. How long? No, we got to try something different. Is it wrong? No. To those who are non-creative, it's okay. He's not creative to the Lord. But those who are creative, He is creative to the Lord. None lives and dies to himself, but to the Lord. So let me die creative to the Lord. Does it make sense to you? We need to create an atmosphere like this in our church where we can do all these things and differently. And enjoy each other's creativity. Well, if we can do this, it would be wonderful. How I wish we could have, you know, I mean, seriously, we could have more soloists as part of our worship, or duets, or trios, and whatever else. I mean, seriously, and really make it as part of our worship. And it's just, I'm just so deeply touched. I mean, really, really, you can sing. If you cannot sing, please don't be creative. Just don't do that. Go and greet people, smile, but don't go and do that which you can't. I mean, you know, there's got to be a gift in that area. I mean, we just got to appreciate this. And when we are able to do all these things, it really makes us really wonderful. We are able to overcome things. But if you are not a singer, you really, really cannot tell you, you don't know how to do it, then I will tell you, even though it may upset you, I will still tell you, this is not your talent, it's not your gift. Okay? And if your voice is one tone type, you know, you only sing, you say, well, I'm a natural singer. You know? No sharps, no flats, just natural. Well, there are some keys you can sing in that, but not too many. Okay? So we need to appreciate these things, and then we look at it, and we can solve many problems like that. In church, you cannot please everybody. Someone asks a church pastor, and he says, you got so many people, how do you please everybody? And he said, I don't please anybody. It's only one person I seek to please, and that's the Lord, and I don't please anybody. And that's how it is. Don't please anybody. Don't aim to please anybody. Just the Lord. That's the only way to go. Okay? So we are not going to please a rich man. We're not going to please a poor man. We're just not going to please anybody. I mean, it's important. Okay? Then he says, all right, then I'll take out my loan. All right. This is why sometimes when loans are given, you've got to be very careful. You cannot just pay to the bank completely, because if that is recalled immediately, we are going to get stuck. Wisdom tells us, don't do it. Obviously. Because the person's offended and says, I want back the money, you've got a problem. We've got to be enlightened on this matter here. So just sometimes you've got to be very, very wise. Okay? So you learn how to not please people, but the Lord. Okay? All right, any questions you want to ask? We'll save the questions later on for that part. Is it problem solving, can or not? The afternoon part. And we make it as interesting as possible in the afternoon rather than now. But just know the principles first. Know the principle, know the practices. The afternoon time, lunchtime, we look at some of the problems. All right, any questions you want to raise up? Most people avoid problems. They don't want to talk about problems. So, thus the silence. Any questions anybody want to raise up? If not, we'll just take a break and then we'll get ready for lunch. Okay, remember Romans 14 during lunchtime. He who eats, eats to the Lord. Paul does not say how much. Okay? Alright, let's pray before we go. Our Father, we just want to thank you for the time we've had to learn about how we can look at problems that will plague the church. And we know that they will never go away. Teach us how to exercise wisdom, forgiveness, a great sense of kindness, understanding, and creativity as well. We pray that you will help us to do our part, making sure that we will do everything we can to enhance your work. Give us hearts that will enable us to love our church a bit more, and then work towards its greater growth, greater good. Bless us as we take a break. Refresh us over lunch, we pray in Jesus' name.